Good morning. So this morning we are reading from Mark chapter 10, verse 35 to 45. And we are covering the subject of your earth suit general needs, and specifically the topic of areas to still grow in. Now, this is the second last message of all the messages relating to how to measure your spirit, how to measure your emotions, how to measure your earth suit, right? And it's probably one of the most fundamental messages. You see, this message talks about something Satan instituted way back up in heaven as a control mechanism. Instead of letting God be in control, Satan took charge and he changed things to suit himself and the way he wanted to do things, and he tried to become like God. For that he was kicked out of heaven and sent down to earth. Right? We've been dealing with him since he had that conversation with Adam and Eve in the garden, and where he beguiled Eve and wound up causing man to hand over everything to do with the world to Satan, and since then we have been stuck in his kingdoms, right? And he has been building things. Well, when Abraham was faithful to God, and God could see in Abraham a heart for him, God needed Abraham to sow something that he would be able to respond to, because God can only respond to something that's been sown. Nothing can grow unless you sow it. And so in order to send Jesus, he needed the heart of somebody to willingly give up their child. And that was the promise. So the promised child was the same as the promised seed back in Genesis, when God promised Satan that he was going to send a seed. A seed being a male human being. And this male human being was going to be carrying God's seed. So God promised he was going to send himself some point or another. At that point, he had not had mankind sow in a seed that he could then respond to. Abraham then went through the process of, in his heart at any rate, sacrificing Isaac. God stopped him from doing it physically, but in his heart he had done it. And God said, because you've done this, God promised that he would send Jesus, right? And that Jesus would be sacrificed, which is why a ram was caught in a thicket by its horns, which is why Jesus had a crown of thorns on his head. It's the same tree, the same acacia thorns that were used in both cases. I mean, the parallel is amazing. So now we've got to go back a little bit, because Satan has now corrupted the earth. Totally corrupted it, to the point whereby the Nephilim had created giants that were eating everything, including people, and eventually they were eating each other. And that's because the spirits within them were never created by God. They were created by these Nephilim messing with what God had intended, right? And so when their bodies died in the great flood, their spirits still roamed the earth, and that's why we've got these spirits all over the place creating all sorts of trouble, right? And God said they will be called evil spirits. Well, fast forward after the flood, Noah had brought that which God had wanted to come through. Anyway, so after the flood, we have the situation whereby we eventually get to Abraham. Abraham is then found faithful. He sows the seed in terms of willingly giving his son, and that meant God could now willingly give his son at a later stage. But after the flood, there was this relationship in Abraham's environment whereby he operated with lots of servants and he treated everybody equally. That's not the way Satan likes to do things, right? But he did. And this was his heart. And that same heart has been following through all the way through down the line, right? Eventually, we get to Moses. Now, Moses was the only one of his year that survived because all the other babies of his age group were killed off by Pharaoh. But he was raised in Pharaoh's house by Pharaoh's daughter. It's amazing how God works, right? Anyway, so, and then he winds up going into the desert, and when he then encounters the burning bush, which is Jesus talking to him, and Jesus saying, now I want you to go back. By the way, you tried to do this yourself the first time and it failed, but now I'm sending you. And I want you to go back and I want you to lead these people out. Now, they had been slaves, right? They'd been slaves all along. And by the time they leave Egypt, you find that Moses is the only one that everyone looks up to. Yes, there are some elders, etc., but nobody's really in charge. It's just Moses. Everybody has to go to Moses. Because Moses is the only one that has a hearing from God. And they've recognized after these 10 plagues, you know what, you don't mess with God, right? If God says, you do. Now, they then leave. And it wasn't just the slaves. Were a mixture of the Israelites and various other countries' slaves, etc. Well, the whole mixed multitude also left with the Israelites. And they went out into the desert, and whenever they had a problem, they would now come to Moses, right? And Moses would then hear from the Lord, and Moses would give them the answer. And this is what it was all about. Now, this was working pretty well. This was working pretty well until a Midianite priest doesn't know God at all and is serving Satan, comes along and he says something to Moses. And because this Midianite priest was actually Moses' father-in-law, there was a sense of respect that Moses had towards him. Now, you've got to recognize that Satan will not just use anybody. He will find ways to use people who are going to have influence over the people that he's trying to get to, right? So in this case, Moses, and we're going to jump there. So we're going to jump to Exodus chapter 18. When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back, and her two sons, of which the name of the one, Gershom, and he said, I have been an alien in a strange land, and the name of the other, Eleazar, for the God of my father was mine help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses into the wilderness, where he encamped at the mount of God. And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law, Jethro, am come unto thee, and thy wife and her two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and did obeisance and kissed him. And they asked each other of welfare. And they came into the tent, and Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and the Lord delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro blessed the Lord, who hath delivered him. And Jethro said, Blessed the Lord, who hath delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who hath delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord greater than all gods, for in the thing wherein they dealt proudly above them. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God and Aaron. And Aaron came, and all the elders of Israel, to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening. So in other words, they all stood in a line waiting for their turn to talk to Moses about something that was a problem. Right? And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto evening? Now listen carefully to this. A priest that is not of God is telling Moses, what are you doing? Why are you letting these people come and talk to you only? Well, we know the reason. Moses was the only one connected to God, right? And Moses said unto his father-in-law, Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that thou doest not good. Now, at what point did God say to Moses, By the way, you mustn't do it this way? Nowhere. Nowhere. Jethro is sowing a seed into Moses here. Right? And who's behind it? Satan. You'll see why just now. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that thou doest not good, thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that with thee, for this thing too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. He is telling Moses he cannot do what God has given him to do. He's telling Moses that he's going to wear out. Before this, Moses had never considered that he could be worn out. He'd never considered any of these things. And by the way, he wasn't being worn out. He was being supernaturally supported. Because he had the total faith in the Lord to do whatever the Lord wanted. Now, Jethro is sowing into Moses that doubt. He's sowing doubt that God cannot sustain you or these people. Now he's going to give Satan's chosen way of doing things, right? Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way therein they must walk, and work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place over them rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, of fifties, and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace. You see, promising peace, promising all these things, no hardship, simple, split it up. But where's the division? You see, Satan wants to get between the people and God. To do that, he has to get between Moses and the people. And so he says, well, you talk to God and then just set up a whole hierarchy of people who can then decide whether or not something's important enough to bring it to you. Where's the decision? It's no longer Moses and God making the decision about what's important. The decision about whether something's important or not now rests with these people whom Satan can influence. And a bit later, we see we have the golden calf, we have numbers of times where people stood up and resisted Moses, and all started at this point where you bring a hierarchy in and you kick God out of that way that he operates across everybody. Now look at this. When people were standing in a long line, waiting to talk to Moses, who was talking to them in their hearts? They would have conversations, they would whatever, and God would speak within their hearts to them and to each other, and most of them would wind up going home because God had resolved it in the line. Right? Wasn't an issue anymore. So God already had a way to do this. Satan needed to take that away and then replace it with man's logic. Man's logic. So now we go back to where we were. Mark 10 verse 35 to 45. And we start reading. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldest do for us whatsoever we shall desire. And he said unto them, What would ye that I should do for you? And said unto him, Grant unto us that we may sit one on thy right hand, and the other on thy left hand, in thy glory. But Jesus said unto them, Ye know not what ye ask. Can ye drink the cup that I drink of, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they said unto him, We can. And Jesus said unto them, Ye shall indeed drink of the cup that I drink of, and with the baptism that I am baptized withal shall ye be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but for whom it is prepared. And when the ten heard, this is the other disciples, when the ten heard, they began to be much displeased with James and John. Why? James and John are trying to seek some kind of a promotion or an oversight, an overseer position, and importance. That's what they're looking for, right? But Jesus called them, and saith unto them, Ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you. Now we go all the way back to the point where Satan entered the principle of hierarchy. We go all the way back there and we see here Jesus is saying, no, doesn't work like that with you. Works like that in the world, but does not work like that with you. Works like that in Satan's kingdoms, does not work like that in God's kingdoms. Verse 43. But so shall it not be among you, but whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister. Minister is a servant, right? Will be your servant. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. There's no hierarchy. There's no hierarchy. If there's a hierarchy at all, it's upside down triangle, because Jesus is the greatest servant, and then everybody else who are servants, they are building upwards to the people who are serving nobody. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Your physical earth suit was born into a world of control set up on the principle of hierarchy, introduced by Satan right up in heaven, where he was controlling everything because he knew what was going on, because he could adjust and lead groups of people by just adjusting the leaders. And the more he could twist a leader, the more he brought an entire group of people with him. That is the principle of hierarchy that Satan entered into. When he was kicked out of heaven, everything in heaven returned to what it should be, which is everybody giving, nobody receiving back from the person that they gave to, which is trade. So trade is the principle that underscores and requires hierarchy to exist. Without hierarchy, there's no control. And the control mechanism is trade, because I know that you've given this to so-and-so because so-and-so has given something back of equal value in return to you, and that way I can control it, and by the way, I can account for it. And that is the nature and the pattern of this world that Jesus said, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world. That's what he was talking about. That's what he was talking about. You know, people say, oh, you're a pastor. I'm not a pastor. I'm just your brother. I'm just your brother. That's all I am. And there is no hierarchy. And all of us are equal. Yes, we have different functions, we have different gift things, and all the rest of it. We work according to those things, but none of us is in control of another one. We serve each other. We allow, and this is the key, we allow the Holy Spirit to be in charge of all of us. And we allow the Holy Spirit to determine what it is that he wants us to do, when and how, and we do it. We do it for each other, and we do it as the Lord leads us. That's how the church is supposed to be working. Not this business principles, not this way that things are set up. There are things that Paul introduced right up front, which were not introduced by the apostles. An elder is a servant, not a controller. The Holy Spirit is a controller. It's the reason why when decisions are made, if the decision is not unanimous, then you don't go forward with it, because the Holy Spirit needs to drive that decision. And if you have people who you've allowed to join you because they've got lots of money or things like that, they've got power, etc., and that's why you've got them as elders or leaders, well, then you are just running your church by business principles, and God is not working in it. And you're calling blessings blessings because it looks like the blessing that the world would get. Lots of money, lots of fame, lots of power. Those are things that the world would get. Jesus got none of that. Jesus didn't get power and all these other things. No, he didn't. And that's who we're supposed to emulate, right? So when you next speak to somebody, understand that according to God, there's no oversight that you have and no rulership that you have over that other person. You both submit to God. He or she is your brother or sister. In fact, every spirit is neither male nor female, so we call them brethren. Why? within the earth suit of the male or the female is your brother. And none of you rule over any of them, and I rule over none of them either. Everything I say, you take to the Holy Spirit and you talk to Him. Do not accept what I say. Take it to the Holy Spirit and ask the Holy Spirit. Well, guys, not sure what Holy Spirit's speaking to you about, but if you are following along with us in the handbook, then make your keywords in the second column and score yourself in the right. God bless and have an absolutely beautiful day.